I'm Dani Shapiro, and this is The Way We Live Now. Today is day 107, since the question, "How are you?" has often been met with an awkward pause, and day 53 of this podcast. My guest today is the brilliant writer, Buddhist, and psychiatrist, Mark Epstein, author most recently of Advice Not Given, A Guide to Getting Over Yourself. I've been reading and loving Mark's work for many years, and it's an honor to have him on the show. Mark, thank you so much for joining me to talk about the way we're living now.
It's a pleasure, Dani.
Please describe your surroundings for us. Give us a snapshot of where you are, what you're looking at as we're speaking.
I'll set it off against where I used to be. For 33 years or so, I'm a psychiatrist, a therapist, a writer. Mostly what I do is see patients. And I had a basement office in a loft building in Tribeca in downtown Manhattan that I've worked out of for the past 33 years or so. But now I'm upstate in a house that we have in Woodstock, New York. And I'm in the spare bedroom that I've converted into a writing and speaking room. So there's a ceiling fan and a sliding door. It's a 1964 flat-roofed house. So I'm looking out at the trees and the sky. So I have a real window that I'm not used to, and nature that's been encroaching for the past 3 or 4 months. Into my consciousness.
That's so interesting. I've had that same experience. I live in the country, moved from the city 18 years ago. And this year, I realized that I had never watched spring actually happen in slow motion, even though I was here, or often I wasn't here, I was traveling, but I never had that experience of watching it day by day.
Yeah, watching it day by day. And at the same time seems to have dissolved. So in my mind, it's still March, but it's a very strange, thing.
So did you move up to Woodstock because of the pandemic and just getting out of the city?
Yeah. I mean, basically we've been, I'm married to a sculptor and she has her main studio up here. So up until the virus, we were going back and forth. She was spending more time up here and I was doing all my work in the city, and we would go back and forth every week. But when the virus began, we just came up here, and I started doing all of my therapy work, on the telephone or on Zoom or on Skype or on FaceTime or whatever, whatever anybody wanted.
Had you ever worked that way before?
No, I always resisted it. I hardly ever. People would ask me, if they could have sessions while they were in California or traveling or whatever. And I always said no. I was very attached to face-to-face and in-person and to my little office. But now I've totally surrendered.
Is there anything that you can say is qualitatively different or that you're missing? Or is it just really that we adapt?
I haven't started with anybody new. So I've only been working with people who I already knew pretty well, and I've been relieved and sort of surprised at how seamless the connections have been. So it's kind of freed me from my from attachments I didn't know I had to the in-person and the office, and you can hear from how often I'm talking about that already that I'm not completely detached, but it's freed me up some, which has been a good thing. And I miss the the human body to body with psychotherapy space in between, but the one-on-one in person, I miss that some. But I've been pretty happy with the way things have been in terms of the therapy work.
You live in many ways at the intersection of Buddhism and psychoanalysis.
Yeah, psychotherapy.
Psychotherapy.
Anyway. Yeah.
And you've written about this. You've You've written about that.
Ad nauseum.
No, I've loved reading you for many years. And you've written about the trauma of everyday life. And it just struck me when I was thinking of talking with you that we're in a time now where it seems our experience is being ratcheted up. And
yeah.
People are having all kinds of responses during the pandemic, you know, anxiety, fear, despair, confusion, apathy, I mean, the gamut.
Yeah.
Can you speak about what you're seeing and experiencing and how you're guiding people during this time?
Sure. Well, I wrote that book, The Trauma of Everyday Life, seven, 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What I found myself saying all the time when I was talking about the book was that if we're not suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, we're suffering from pre-traumatic stress disorder because, like the Buddha said 2,500 years ago, trauma, although he didn't have that word, he used the word dukkha, trauma runs like an underground river through all of our lives, because the specter of old age and sickness and death and separation from those we love, that's inevitable for all of us at some point in life. So the strange thing about the virus, about this time, is that some aspect of that has been hitting everybody all at the same time. So that's, very, very unusual. It hasn't happened in 100 years, it's not out of this world. It's a sort of extreme example of what awaits us all anyway. So it's bringing up for many people, it's bringing up past traumatic experiences that have not been completely worked through. And for many other people, it's creating, a kind of first taste of a traumatic experience that people have to figure out how to deal with. And for me, my Buddhist background, because I was drawn to Buddhism, involved with Buddhism before I became a therapist, before I knew very much about Western therapy. The Buddhist background that I have has helped me some in adjusting, coping, dealing with all these changes that we have to deal with.
Hmm. I heard somewhere, I think on another podcast you were on, that you were about to go on an annual
retreat.
Yeah. Right at the time, just as we were starting to understand that.
Yeah. I've been trying to go on these silent mindfulness-based meditation retreats, once a year since my kids grew up. And I was had my reservation and I had my coffee that I bought to bring with me. And
that's not cheating.
It's not cheating. Yeah. You can bring coffee and my unscented soap. I had all my supplies and I was getting ready to go right at the beginning of March. And my wife was like, I don't think you can go. And I was holding on tight to going. And then clearly I couldn't go. And then they closed the retreat center a couple of days after I was supposed to be there. But instead of me being alone on retreat, it turned out that everyone in the whole world had to be on retreat at the same time. So. I had to use what I've learned over those many retreats to kind of pace myself during this time.
Yeah, that's something I really wanted to talk to you about. So, you've referred to this time as an accidental retreat for all of us, and I actually think that that's a really gentle and profound way of coming to think about this time. Instead of forced isolation or somehow punishment, or to think of it, if it's a retreat, even if it's an accidental retreat or one that, none of us wanted for all of the reasons that the world is in a state of is suffering, but how might we be more purposeful and thoughtful as we're navigating this terrain?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. My experience going on these retreats is that whatever is kind of lurking in the shadows of my psyche, there's an opportunity for that hidden material to reveal itself, either in my dreams, or in the meditation itself, in the thoughts that come or the memories that come. And I'm always surprised and kind of taken aback and curious about what's going to come up or what does come up. But I think something similar is happening for a lot of people, either in their family lives, in their marriages, in their domestic environments, that things that maybe were being pushed under the rug, that there wasn't time to really deal with or even to notice, given the way time is kind of paralyzed, there's opportunity for all of the stuff that we might be ignoring in our regular lives to, that we can actually pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. So there's a chance to come to terms with stuff, to make peace with stuff, to make some internal changes that maybe need to be made. Anyway,
it's so interesting to me. I've been thinking of so much about it and wondering whether I'm making too much of the confluence of events, you know, these two thunderclaps of COVID-19 and the death of George Floyd and the outpouring that's happened since then, I feel has something to do with the fact that we're left alone with ourselves, you know, that there's no distraction.
Yeah. And who knows what else is going to reveal itself, you know?
Yeah.
I have an old friend of mine. People will think I'm strange about this, but an old friend of mine is an astrologer, and she said there's a, you know, Saturn-Pluto conjunction happening, started in February, that's going to last about 2 years, because Pluto, the furthest out planet, moves so slowly. So it's, even from an astrological perspective, it's a time of hidden things being turned up and exposed and having to let go of what we've outgrown.
Yeah. It's like a reckoning on top of a reckoning on top of a reckoning.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what is bringing you hope now?
The possibility of a vaccine, that's, which I think is far off, unfortunately, from everything that I've been reading, trying to make use of my medical school background. I don't have a lot of hope for the near future. I think we're in a period of abeyance, at least in New York, but I doubt that that's going to stick. I have faith in the good sense of the American people that the election is going to bring change, but I've been wrong before. Mm. I've been very touched by how actually willing everyone, they're the bulk of the people in the country and in the world, how willing people have been to sacrifice during this time for the benefit of the greater good, you know. But I don't have a lot of, you know, I think the forces of greed and hatred and ignorance are likely to be as strong as ever. That battle that's been going ever since I was born, I think it's going to continue.
Mm-hmm. In closing, I'm just thinking about people listening and the way in which, you know, we're all isolated either by ourselves or with family or friends. And there's this period that we're in right now as we're speaking where things are kind of opening up and there are a lot of mixed messages, you know, all over the place. And I think so many people are longing to go back to, you know, use words like normal or the new normal or various sort of euphemisms for like, please, let's just have this be over. And of course, it's not going to be over anytime soon, as you say. And I just keep on thinking about plans. And I watched as my entire, you know, months of many, many, many plans and travel and all sorts of things were like instantly within a day, like your retreat, sort of stripped away. And my calendar went from very full to completely blank. And the thought that I was having that I guess would be sort of at the intersection of Buddhism and psychotherapy is our plans are really always just fantasies.
Yeah. Well, you're saying a lot of profound things there, Danny. But in my trauma book, I use this phrase, the rush to normal. The tendency when dealing with a traumatic event is to try to rush back to normal, you know, and that that rush to normal doesn't allow for the processing of the emotions, of the reactions, of the responses to the traumatic event. It just pushes it down. And that's what leads to what we call post-traumatic stress, you know, where the unworked through aspects of whatever happened, it has nowhere to go except up through your dreams and, you know, out later in life to nag at you and make you anxious. So, but that's a real human tendency to try to get back to the way things are supposed to be, to the way things were. And what we learn in meditation, what we learn from Buddhism is that, you know, we never know what the next moment is going to bring. We really don't. A lot of the time, the probability is that we can almost know, you know, but we never really know. And now we're really dwelling in uncertainty. Now, you know, all we have are our memories and this moment. And it's very uncertain what tomorrow is going to be, let alone, you know, November. It's possible to live much more in the moment, as you were saying, experiencing the spring, you know, but that was so wonderful to see the spring unfold moment to moment, day to day. And we can live like that. And right now, fortunately or unfortunately, we kind of have to live like that, because the more we try to make things the way they were, the more it's going to rebel against us, and we'll end up suffering more for that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think embracing, there's a peace that can be found at the center of that, embracing the uncertainty. I guess that's what we're all needing to find. We need to find it. Yeah.
I called one of my books Going to Pieces Without Falling Apart.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like where we're all at right now.
Oh, that's perfect.
If we're not falling apart, at least we have to let ourselves go to pieces. Right. That's sort of like letting all those plans and expectations and so on. You know, we really do all have to let that go.
Yeah. Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. And it's just a gift.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for listening to The Way We Live Now. Tell us the way you're living now. We want to hear. Call us on, you might want to get a pen for this, 909-713-8995. That's 909-713-8995. And record your story, and we might just use it on the pod. Also, you can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/thewaywelivenowpod. We are creating a community here, and we would love for you to join us. You can find me on Instagram at Danny Ryder. The Way We Live Now is a production of iHeartRadio. It's produced by Lowell Berlanti. Beth Ann Macaluso is executive producer. Special thanks to Tristan McNeil and Tyler Klang. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.